race, birds, snakes, and airplanes. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I am a hurricane, listen to yourself, turn world to its own needs, dummy serve your own needs, beat it up a notch, speak front, no strings, none matter, start to clatter with fear, fight down, high wire in a fire, rivers in a seven gauge, in a government for hire, in a combat site. Let the weapon coming in a hurry with the fury speeding down.
From New York City, the survival capital of the world, this is Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman, and on tonight's show, we have Nancy Leader as my special guest. Nancy, by the way, is the woman who got all kinds of publicity in the past couple of weeks, having to do with a lot of it revolving around the end date of the Mayan calendar and the concerns that the people have been having about Planet X and whether Planet X is at Earth's doorstep or soon will be at Earth's doorstep. We're going to talk to Nancy about that and explore how this phenomenon all got started, because she had to deal with a lot of flack from NASA, and specifically from a man by the name of David Morrison, who is sort of their front guy when it comes to trying to tamp down and claim that all these things are just made up, including Planet X, which certainly isn't. They're not made up. But Nancy, I'd like to welcome you to Radio Doomsday Live. Good to have you with us today.
Hi. Yes, indeed. David Morrison of NASA and Don Humans of JPL have mentioned me, and to my knowledge, only Nancy Leader as someone that the public should not listen to. And they started this in 2009 in interviews that they've given and in little YouTube videos, etc., saying, just don't listen to that woman in Wisconsin, Nancy Leader, who tells you that Nibiru is real, Planet X, etc., it goes by many names. Well, of course, it came into the solar system in 2003. People are photographing and videotaping this complex, which is more than just a dust cloud-shrouded planet four times the diameter of Earth. It is also has a entourage of at least a couple dozen moons that go into swirls, long tubes. You can see these slung out like a string of pearls sometimes. Sometimes they turn so the tube funnels sunlight, and it looks like a flashlight, bright orbs around the sun. And it's coming at us from the direction of the sun. So people have been using filters to damp down the glare of the sun, welder's lens, although you have to get the right quality or it damps down too much light. But it just take a filter, an insert from an old floppy disk, it filters for the red light spectrum, which because of the iron oxide dust that the Book of Revelation talks about, making the water bitter and turning blood red and the like, it actually allows the light from the Planet X dust cloud and the like to filter through and filters out every other light spectrum. And boy, can you see it. You see the tail wafting over to the left under the sun and curling around on top of the sun. And that's in our view. It's a two-dimensional affair, but this whole complex is a little closer to the sun than Venus at present. So it's there. People are taking, and they can see it, especially sunrise and sunset. The sun will sometimes bounce off that dust cloud and make it appear that two suns are rising or setting. People talk about this. They get this on film. And meanwhile, NASA's saying, no, don't listen to Nancy Leader.
Nancy, when they attack you, I notice that they're using the UFO angle, saying that sort of implying that you're some kind of a crazy UFO contactee. Tell us a little bit about your experience with or experiences with UFOs and how you got started in all of this, and what led you to your involvement with Planet X.
absolutely. And I've been a contactee just about all my life, and in past lives of the Zetas from Zeta Reticuli, who are one of, a thousand or more different alien life forms visiting Earth, most of which are not hominoid. Since childhood, and apparently they knew me from past lives and knew that I could resist intimidation and would not be bribed, could stand up to all the, because there's a cover-up over all of this. You know, they don't want your messy panic. The elite want to have their bunkers, and they want to stay in your job, you know, pay your mortgage, and then, whoops, we're going into our bunkers, and good luck, thanks for all your taxpayer donations.
How much time, Nancy? How much time do you think we have left before Planet X? Because if it's as close as you say that it might be, how much time would we have left as far as flooding on an enormous scale, and loss of life would be enormous as well?
Apparently, the rules are, since this is our spiritual schoolhouse, and we're supposed to be faced with opportunities to rise and be heroes and care for other people and put ourselves at risk or be utterly self-focused. And it's like with tornadoes and earthquakes and the like, they just come and strike us and take us by surprise. The date is not to be known, but beyond that, also because of the opportunists that would try to put you in slave camps, rip off all your money and leave you destitute, whatever, that would run risk if the date was actually known. So they have a sequence of events, they've told us. 2 months of last week's things, severe wobble, 3 days of darkness, the earth turning around, then rotation coming to a stop, and then the hour of the pole shift. All the signs to look for, all the plate movements we're currently experiencing, and it's starting to really pick up, increase in earthquakes, increase in volcanism, the earth wobble that is actually measurable. If you look where the sun is rising and setting, it's not where it's supposed to be. There's a figure eight being drawn by the North Pole every day. So no date, just a lot of things to look for. Sorry about that. Everyone wants to know that, but the Thetas are constantly saying, don't wait, don't linger. You need to get inland and high ground, chickens, goats, learn how to garden, give up your beautiful beaches, give up, you know, staying in the penthouse, and maybe you have to take a lesser job or whatever. You won't regret it, because if you stay in the city, particularly the coastal cities, where, in fact, most cities are, you can get trapped. You might be blocked there. You know, there might be people who say, we don't want you wandering out, you know, through the rich suburbs and into the countryside, pointing guns at you and making you stay in the city, which, of course, big earthquakes will bring that all down on you. And what the heck are you going to eat? That's going to be tricky.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, so much of what you're saying about moving inland and everything else, the stuff that I've been talking about constantly on my program since we began this Radio Doomsday Live about 6 or 8 months ago now. The Hopis and the I've been in touch with the some of the leading Mayan elders from both Mexico and Guatemala, and they have been in contact with Hopi Indians, and they more or less both agree, even though the timing is impossible to anyone really to know, but they basically feel that we may have a couple of years before a pole shift. But a pole shift, Nancy, would be like really super catastrophic. I mean,
right.
Most people wouldn't survive a pole shift. Do you agree?
Yeah. The Zetas have said 90% of the world's populace will die, although most will be due to starvation and just sitting down and giving up. Depression, you know, I've lost it all. You know, my 401k, my home that I was almost paid off, and whatever, and just giving up. And if you do that, you drop your immune system. Pretty soon you've got a bad cough, you know, that pneumonia or whatever, starvation, you know, st- don't eat or drink for 3 weeks, and that's it. You slip away. So some of that will be from drowning because of the sloshing oceans and being in a city where their buildings drop on you, literally, and injuries and that type of thing. But I would agree with you. My personal feeling is that it may be true that we'll have a couple of years, and I've said that recently. I don't see it for 2013 and likely not for 2014, and the reason is this is such an opportunity for spiritual lessons. And this was supposed to be a really severe pole shift because it's a transformative time when we're going to be taking mankind's next leap forward, and we're going to become galactic citizens and meeting, you know, creatures from other worlds, intelligent creatures. The contactee experience is just exploding lately. In the beginning of 2012, the Zetas were saying, well, now we would say there's 1 billion contactees, and then toward the end they said, let's say 2 billion and rising. And yet in 2008 they said 12,000 people were solidly contactees. So the number is exploding, and people are already becoming galactic citizens. And the opportunities for you to open your home, take in extra people that are homeless, get out in the garden, and you know, people will be talking to each other instead of staring at the TV. And we've become a very isolated culture. You know, everybody has their own home, and they're sitting there lonely hours, many lonely hours, dusting off their trinkets on their shelves or whatever. And that's not a spiritual growth environment. Interacting with people and, you know, helping each other out and sacrificing some of what you have and giving it to another. This is such an opportunity for this kind of spiritual growth. It's often been asked, well, what about healing? Can't you come down and heal us? And why can't you stop this from happening? And, well, because, you know, they're not here, the aliens, in the first place, the visitors. They're not allowed to just give you anything you want. It's just a schoolhouse. And there is an administrative force in the universe. And they have to go by the rule of non-interference. You get to make your mistakes. You get to learn from your mistakes. That's the best way of learning. And if everyone was beautiful and never had an injury or poor health and never starved, and it's like gorgeous jet-set life, what kind of spiritual lessons do you think would take place in that environment? None. So therefore, you know, there has to be hardship in order for spiritual growth to occur, both receiving and giving.
But Nancy, you're talking. You've been saying that that a very large, as I believe as well, a very large percentage of the population is going to just not going to make it through this transitional period.
Right.
And those who do might be spiritually will experience a spiritual ascension. Why should we need to go through all of that? I know that that's one of those questions that there just doesn't seem to be an answer for, but why do you think we need to go through all of that process?
Well, that's a question for God, which neither you or I are privy to, and when you ask the Zetas, which are my contacts, that they say the same thing. This is God's plan, the way he set the universe up, you know, to where souls spark on intelligent life, and they spark most often because that life has challenges, and then they grow, and they become, the souls reincarnate and become more massive and wise, you know, over thousands and sometimes millions of incarnated lifetimes. And it's the way the universe is structured, and you'd have to ask God that. But having an easy time of it, and just, this is a natural occurrence. We don't today, you say, people say, oh, whine, why do we have to, you know, and because, you know, my 401k, and because what happens in sub-Sahara Africa, all those stick children stumbling around, or over there where you have insects in eyeballs, parasites that blind people.
Yeah.
Because, and then you go into tornadoes and the like, and floods, which don't ask for, They don't knock on your door and say, would you mind if I'd come through?
Right.
It just slams you. And this, and cancer, and birth defects, and on. So none of this is, you know, being exempt because people would be troubled. It's just when people who are comfortable and living, you know, in New York City, if you will, you know, in a loft apartment or whatever, and say, well, why should we have to be troubled like this? So basically, it's the way of life, really.
Okay, what is the relationship, do you think, between the, let's say, the Zetas or some other alien group and the, I hate to use the word alien, let's say extraterrestrial group, and God?
And God? They say that they do not understand what God's plan is or what God is any more than we do. And, you know, they don't, they say, we see the workings of the universe and how infinitely complex it is, and how life evolves on worlds, even without being seeded. It just happens, you know, after a period of time, that and it evolves in a similar manner on so many worlds that they couldn't even give us a number to count the ones that they're aware of that are life-bearing. And they say, and the way the universe operates, you know, with the Big Bang and then coming back down to close into a black hole somewhere to refresh and have another Big Bang. Meanwhile, souls are being born, challenged, are growing, you know, becoming more massive, because the stuff of souls does not do this Big Bang and black hole, etc. Once the soul has sparked, it does not die. It only grows more massive. So they say they don't understand God's plan any more than we do, but they see the wonder of the universe and how it's laid out, and they know this is not an accident. That's the way they put it.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about the Anunnaki, who, of course, are the inhabitants, or we think are the inhabitants of planet X and Nibiru. When do you think that they're coming down? Are they coming down?
No, they're quarantined. And boy, this is a burning question. And I got to tell you, even NASA wanted to ask me that. And because, you know, I can be taken by, you know, teleported for a conference with NASA, and they were very curious about this. You know, are they? Do we have to worry about it? You know, there are some survivors, or I would have to say, Anunnaki group down in Patagonia that are very, very large, very tall hominoids, and they stay in the forest. They stay apart from everybody else. These are some Anunnaki bloodline. You know that.
Did you say that you were contacted by NASA directly?
Because they know that I was a member of MJ-12. I went into an engagement with them. I had an issue that I wanted to argue, and there was like 2,000 people, intel organizations, et cetera, et cetera. And all these people of NASA had to know was it was arranged. All they had to know was that Nancy Leader was in this room, and they went in and talked to me, and then they left, and then they said, I don't know how she got from wherever that was to Wisconsin, but she's no longer in that room. And so they know that it's via an alien teleporting that I got there. But MJ-12 had 2,000 members, and these people were and some members of NASA were members of MJ-12. And once they are aware and they're in MJ-12, then it's not against the rules for them to be aware of alien interaction. I guess that's the best way of putting it.
Okay. Are you saying, though, that the MJ-12 organization that was dealing with the Roswell crash recovery, that still exists?
Yeah, they did. They were running strong. in the mid-1990s when I went into an engagement with them. And that ran all the way until Bush and Cheney won the election, or I should say stole the election. It was voter or election fraud, and with the Diebold machines and et cetera, et cetera. So there was two governing boards, each 20 members. One was Intel organizations, they were really the working board, and the other was 20 people that were civilians that had been appointed, and they all elected to close down MJ-12 because they felt that Bush and Cheney would misuse whatever privileges the MJ-12 organization offered. They wanted to prevent them from using any kind of spaceship transportation and the like that the MJ-12 had arranged, you know, through treaties with alien organizations.
Now, you know, Nancy, some of this that you're saying now, you know, some people just wouldn't buy for a minute. I mean, it sounds pretty outlandish.
Sounds wacky, doesn't it? And that's what the Zeta Talk accuracy is all about, which is something that the Zetas had me crowing about early on. You know, when they would make a prediction and something would come true, they would say, Zeta's right again, hoo-hoo, ha-ha, look at that. And this goes on in hundreds of instances. People that keep track, I don't even keep track of it anymore, you know, where they've said that such and so is going to happen, and it did, you know, increased albinism, the earth wobble that is actually measurable, you know, the rise in earthquakes, which it, on a chart runs up like a parabola curve, and volcanism, and the fact that Nibiru came into the solar system in 2003, we tracked it in 2001, 2, and 3, and so did many people around the world. So this is not a woman in central Wisconsin who only has a high school degree who's coming up with this stuff. And examples are scientific, where they described how magnetons and gravitons operate, you know, particle flows and the like, and the gravity repulsion force. So after Zeta Talk would come out on these issues, a few years later, here come the scientists saying, oh, what we've now discovered. I've been told by scientists that there are people who pore over Zeta Talk looking for insights into, and then they do research in the avenue, you know, that the Zetas have talked about and find out that it's true. And then they publish papers and say, oh, we've done this study and we found blah, blah, blah. Well, guess who told you that?
I understand. So let's see, Nancy, why don't you recall how you originally met the Zetas, describe your encounters with them initially and more recently, and just tell us something about them.
Yeah, well, in this lifetime, I was about 7 or 8 years old. I was a little tomboy, ran around with bare feet, little bib jeans, you know, that hook up over, climb trees, catch frogs. And I was down in the woods, and they just sort of popped out from behind the trees and checked me out. So after that, and I did participate in Mankind's Next Leap Forward, which is a Zeta-Human hybrid, and gave my ova, and so that was involved, you know, when I was a teenager, really. I would say more that than I married at 19 as a virgin. You know, I think that my recall on the hybrid program was in the teens. Lots of contact, and because I said that I wanted to be in a communication role during the coming times, which I had most reincarnating souls have experienced pole shifts or crustal shifts in the past. This is a natural situation for our Earth because Nibiru or Planet X or Wormwood, whatever you want to call it, comes through every 3,657 years on average, and therefore we've experienced it in some regard or another, and I wanted. So when Zeta Talk started up in 1995, it became so successful, so quickly, so internationally known that they had to assign more Zetas to my team, you know, for protection and the like. And it's been massively successful.
Why, Nancy, why do you think that is? Why did it catch on to that degree that quickly?
I think it's the ring of truth. You know, people have, I'll tell you what people have said. They've said, you know, there's things I've wondered about all my life, and I get in there and read Zeta Talk, and by gum, they have the answer. They explain it. You know, in other words, making connecting the dots, making it sense of it all, and the like, in the ring of truth. Those two phrases, you know, are used continuously. That and the fact that when they make predictions, that prediction will happen. And of course, they have predicted the pole shift, the crustal shift, and it hasn't happened yet. You know, but they're, people just, when they discover Zeta Talk, they can't put it down. They pore over any new Zeta Talk. You know, like, that's the first place they aim when New Zeta Talk gets published weekly. You know, like, wait, get out of my way. I got to find out what they're saying, because they know that's where the truth is.
Okay. For sure. I mean, it really sounds very interesting. What about this hybrid stuff that you're referring to?
Well, and Zetas are very compatible with humans as far as a hemoglobin base, you know, of the blood, iron base for blood and the like. Mm-hmm. Unlike the Pleiadians or the Nordics, where they look very much like humans, but they're not really compatible. And so we're in a transformative period. The Earth is destined to be, as Jesus said, a home, you know, 1,000 years of peace, and the meek shall inherit the earth, and put that into another way of saying, if you're good-hearted, you know, you're going to be able to reincarnate on earth, and if you're, and if you haven't evolved spiritually in the right direction, we're going to haul you off to prison planet, you know, to live with your own kind. So that the greedy and the sadistic and control freaks and et cetera, very self-centered individuals, you're going to end up on a planet with people, with souls that are reincarnating, that are like you, and you can all argue about who's going to clean the toilets. So, okay, so mankind's next leap forward, because we're graduating out of kindergarten is basically what it is, and where, you know, we've been allowed to, like, bop each other over the head with blocks and argue about who gets the toy or whether we're going to share in the playpen. And so we need a more intelligent body. And we'll have higher IQs, longer lives, closer to 400 years. And we'll look, we'll be just about as skinny as the Zetas, but we won't be all gray, which really is apparently a problem with our eyes, not being able to see their particular color. But big eyes, but they'll be with white, you know, with hazel blue or whatever, hairless, small breasts. That's mankind's next leap forward, a Zeta-human hybrid.
All right. Brian, do you... let's go back to David Morrison, the guy from NASA, astrobiologist, very well-known, even, I would say, distinguished, except doesn't deserve it, as far as I'm concerned, for his most recent behavior. Are you aware that Morrison had gone on a show on Current TV, which is a station that Al Gore owned, and that he made a highly irresponsible statement, I would have to say, a fabricated statement altogether about the people going out. He said that 25 million Americans were arming themselves with guns and machetes to prepare for that Mayan calendar end date of December 21st, 2012. And I called him on it, and I said, well, you know, where is your backing for that? Where does that come from?
Yeah.
And he refused to come on to Radio Doomsday Live to discuss it, and he was just totally avoiding that.
Yeah. Yeah, he does that, and he even said in something that he published December 13th, saying was a little video that it was supposed to come out after the Mayan calendar.
Yeah,
and he said, publishing it early, and he's saying, but I'm not going to answer email anymore after December 21st. You know, he's backing away from it because he lies. I mean, you know, and he's made a big deal out of we shouldn't you know what I think he's basically doing is he's afraid that when the truth comes out about Nibiru, that it came into the solar system and been around for years now, and people are looking at it, and it's causing an earth wobble, and that's why we have odd tides, and the weather is so irregular, and it's only going to get worse until when we have a crustal shift. And people should be informed of this so that they can make their decisions. You know, I see him thinking of a Hispanic family in L.A. and three little kids, and a guy, and there's no money to move. And, you know, if he knew about this, he would make arrangements, and he would be back in the deserts of Chihuahua or whatever, and not on the coastline where they're all going to drown. And doesn't Morrison saying, yeah, but people might commit suicide if they hear about this scary stuff. Well, my statement is, if you got a truck barreling down the highway at you, and you're standing in the highway, would you rather have someone jumping up and down at the side of the road saying, get out of the road, here it comes, it's a Mack truck, for heaven's sakes, or would you rather have that person fall silent because, you know, it's a scary message?
Yeah,
get mowed over by the truck, you know.
Yeah, what's so ironic here is that Morrison is talking about wants people to remain calm, and that there's no justification and no evidence, really, that Planet X is real, or that it's at our doorstep or soon to be at our doorstep. And yet this is the same guy who makes this inflammatory statement about 2012, and that people are arming themselves with guns and machetes. I mean, I almost had a laugh. Machetes? I mean, yeah, there might be a few here or there, but my God, where's he getting that from?
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's another one. You know, they had a NASA hangout. It was, I think, November 28th. That was the last time, I think, one of the times that he mentioned don't listen to Nancy Leader. Anyway, there they had people that were solar experts, and the USGS was saying, you know, how the earthquakes or whatever. And but the solar experts, there were two of them there, they were saying the sun has had a very quiet cycle, almost a lack of sunspots, and now this is our solar maximum, and it's just asleep. It's just asleep. And believe me, we know if there's solar flares coming around the backside, because we see that with our stereo satellites and that. And but you know what, in 2009 and again, that it was NASA who came out with this thing, there would be electromagnetic, and all the grids would go down, and it was horrible in 1859.
Yeah.
And they were describing this horror that was going to happen as we moved in, and how 2012 was going to be one of the worst solar cycles. And now they're saying, oh, don't be afraid, it's a quiet. Well, they were the ones that were using that solar scare tactic.
Yes, they were, Nancy. And as a matter of fact, that up until the time when NASA, in the last, I would say, 2 or 3 months, started their campaign to attack the 2012 phenomenon, they were very outspoken about the possibility of solar flares, and even, of course, on the government websites, and that's a website, you would see these enormous solar flares coming toward Earth, or at the very least, you know, delivering glancing blows toward Earth. We had some pretty close calls on that. And then, of course, they're covering up so much. I mean, there's the asteroid threat, and Planet X. One of the things that it does is it brings hurls asteroids in Earth's direction, and that's been happening. In fact, there's one that's coming up in about a month from now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And they've been responsible for that themselves. But I think the reason Morrison gets so defensive about this is that he's afraid of being labeled the father of the cover-up. Well, he's not. you know, actually, you can see that in 1983, when they sent up an infrared balloon and looked out toward Orion, it hit the front page of the Washington Post, December 31st, 1983. Check the microfiche at your library. It's down toward the bottom of the page, on the front page. You know, and they said, we found something out there. We don't know, you know, it's either something pretty close to us or way out there, and we're not sure yet. But they were so rattled. And before that, they were out there looking for Nemesis, they called it. Why are all the planets leaning in that direction and the long-period comets sling out in that direction? And then as soon as they found it, all of a sudden there's a cover-up, and they say, never mind. It was a mathematical error. We've redone the math, and we realized, you know, is this nothing there? We didn't find anything. Well, obviously, there was a cover-up. And after that, it was anybody who's talking about an inbound object from that direction, like we did, you know, they can't say enough bad things about, you know, and that includes me. So, you know, because we've been pointing at where it is. We've been telling people where to look. We've been telling them how to take photos. We've been describing what it does to the Earth with the Earth wobble and the sloshing tides and all this. The fact that, you know, Sandy plowed into New York and New Jersey and Irene the year before, this is not an accident. You know, this is because of the wobble and what it does and brings the air masses back. And that's all described within Theta Talk, you know, which is a very voluminous site. It has a nice search engine, by the way.
So, did you ever consider a lawsuit against David Morrison and or NASA?
Well, see, the problem is, the first thing they say in court is, where's your body? Where's the proof? You know, and as long as NASA is saying Nibiru doesn't exist, you know, then how? And I have to tell you, Mike, they're doing me a favor. When I realized that they were naming me and only me by name, I said, oh, what a gift. Now, I got to ask you, how many people hearing all this or seeing, you know, seeing him discuss this stuff, and they're nervous, and they're saying, you know, if you type Nibiru into a search engine or Planet X, whammo, it's viral out there. People are, I keep seeing something in the sky up there, and I'm telling you, or there was two suns that came in, up and rose, and you know, at sunset, and so they say, don't listen to Nancy Leader. How many people do you think wrote that name down and ran to a search engine to type it in and find out just why it is that I'm not supposed to be listened to? You know,
yeah.
I'm sure that the hits on my website took a real spike right after those interviews.
How many people, Nancy, would you say come to your website each day?
Well, let's see. Back in 2004, I had one website, and it was 1.5 million hits a month. But now I have a dozen mirror sites, and things just keep going up. You know, there's a forum called the PoleShiftNing.com that is very much Zeta Talk centric. And they get 750,000 unique visitors every month. So that's some sort of a clue there. But you don't know how many people are just, maybe it just says, but the Zetas have said, I have 1 million fans, but that as it becomes obvious that Nibiru exists, that's going to jump to 1 billion, like almost overnight.
Yeah, well, isn't it true, Nancy, that when we see it up in the sky with the naked eye, I'm getting a little feedback here. Anyway, isn't it true that when we see it, it's too late?
No, not at all. We're seeing it now. It's just how many people see it and how many people recognize what they're seeing. It is true that in the last weeks, it gets so close and it draws Earth close to it, you know, by gravity and before it starts taking off, and then we bounce back into our orbit. So we're going to get within 14 million miles of it, although the major moons do not get more than 5 million miles from Planet X itself. But you can imagine, you know, why is Revelation saying all this red dust? And if you read the Colburn Bible, which was written by the Egyptians, reports at the time of the flood, the time of the Exodus, which matches up very nicely with the book of Exodus, by the way, reports the same thing. They're talking about hail, a lot of red dust laying down, killing the fish, making the water bitter, and something that writhes in the sky like a dragon. And of course, here goes the crustal movement and volcanoes exploding up. You know, they estimate the explosion of Terra, was it Thera, on the island of Santorini in the Mediterranean, is 1,628 years before Christ. Well, the Zetas, you know, Sitchin, the ancient Sumerians, said 3,600 years is the orbit of a Nibiru, or Planet X. And the Zetas say 3,657 years on average. But nobody knows for sure just exactly the date that volcano blew up, because after a passage like this, civilization is so discombobulated. Like, the Egyptians stopped taking the census. They were counting how many geese and how many baskets of wheat and blah, blah, blah. And they just stopped. You know, they were in chaos. So you don't know for sure. Record keeping doesn't pick up for hundreds of years usually after that. So therefore, it's pretty upsetting.
Okay.
Actually, I forgot the question. You know,
there was a man by the name of Robert Harrington who was centrally involved with the discovery of Planet X back in the 1980s. In fact, Harrington. Was following up on my friend late Tom Van Flandern's observations that led him to believe that Planet X was out there, and Harrington went looking for it in a particular area and sure enough was able to find it. Then Van Flandern made an announcement at that time that the government had, that the U.S. Naval Observatory had found what appeared to be a science, at least, of Planet X, and then the stories went forward from there. Of course, to this very day, that is denied by NASA, and says that those original observations were off. But Harrington died not long after that initial announcement was made, and even Tom Van Flandern, about a year and a half ago, passed away, also from cancer. But cancer takes a long time to develop in the body. But there have been also other scientists, particularly astronomers, and particularly astronomers who are involved in tracking near-Earth objects, that have died highly suspicious deaths in recent years. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, every once in a while, the Zetas are asked to confirm or deny, you know, but mostly they confirm, you know, that somebody was assassinated. And as I said, indeed, you know, because there's a cover-up over the presence of Planet X. And it's really gotten out of hand, because you have to, like, tell weathermen not to show any images where two suns are rising or setting. You have to tell editors at newspapers. Talking heads on TV have to have a list of things that they're not going to try to bring up and not mention, or are going to squelch if their guest starts to talk about. And it goes on like that. So it's pretty extensive, you know, they don't know for sure why they're not supposed to talk about the weather extremes, or they're just supposed to say, this is today's weather, instead of, oh my gosh, the records that are being broken.
Yeah, the weathermen, the meteorologists really are, that's a big part of the news business, weather forecasting, and they have big sponsorship, and many of these meteorologists are very highly paid, but they're certainly not telling us how bad the trends are in the weather.
No, they're not. So you have astronomers, and that they have, you know, at the observatories, et cetera, or people that work for NASA, there are people who know, you know, that they've been informed, and they've been sworn to silence. And if they decide they just can't live with themselves, because the people may have a right to know, like this family in L.A. that, you know, could go to Chihuahua and and farm instead of living there where they're going to drown or whatever, because LA is going to have a rough time. All coastal cities will. The cities have said when that 90-degree crustal shift happens, 500 to 600 foot tidal waves, and I'm not talking a wave that high. I'm talking about if water comes in and it just keeps rising. You know, and look at Miami or Paris and Hong Kong, and I mean, these cities are right on the water's edge, you know, so there's going to be a lot of drowning that goes on.
That reminds me of a story. My brother was here from Florida in the general Miami area, and I was telling him some months ago about how New York was susceptible to flooding. And sure enough, then came Hurricane Sandy. But at the time, he said to me, well, you could just move down here to Florida. And then he realized what he was saying. I mean, the water normally goes up almost within maybe 10 or 12 feet to his home. He's got a beautiful home, but what good is it if it gets flooded?
Yeah, it's going to be, and the Zeta talk has gone into that. They've talked about, and not only that, but you have a 90-degree crustal shift. The friction at the bottom of the oceans is going to warm, you know, because heat it gets generated from friction. And the bottom of the oceans is going to warm that very cold water, and so you're going to have swelling water worldwide. So 675 feet on average, the oceans will rise and be that way for quite some time until the new poles refreeze and the oceans cool off and et cetera. So you can, and we've drawn maps, and the Zetas have gone into great detail on what to expect in this or that part of the world. You know, the Mississippi Valley, Siberia just gets devastated, the Amazon Basin, Africa does quite well, you know, so you have to know where to go, and you want to go where there's not a lot of population. In fact, of New York City, the Zetas say, well, you know those New Yorkers, you know, they're brash, loudmouth, demanding, and you don't want to be anywhere near New York in the hills.
I should get out of here for sure, because the handwriting is on the wall. They're talking about building a flood defense system around New York with a system of levees, but it's going to take that would take 8 years to accomplish, and the cost would be astronomical.
Yeah, too late. Yeah, that'll be too late. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, people, and there's a lot of bright spots, because actually everyone's going to get healthier. They're going to lose their flab. You're not going to have as much heart disease. Type 2 diabetes will probably just disappear. Really, you get rid of it if you get skinny enough and starved enough and the like. And listen, insects are mostly protein and fat, you know, and if you have amaranth and corn, which I grow in my garden, you know, you can mix them together. And let me tell you, that's the protein equivalent of red meat. No kidding. You know, so it's really not all that grim. It's just that people have to, like, retool. No more video games. You know, no more sitting like a couch potato all the time. But we'd be healthier. And just think, we're going to start meeting those weird creatures in our consciousness, not being a contactee in your subconscious, but in our consciousness we'll meet those galactic citizens, and won't that be fascinating? And you might even be invited into these high-tech communities that they have.
When do you think that might actually happen?
Well, actually, it's happening now. There are some, the good-hearted get to live because they are inheriting, you know. And there are cases where, you know, like down in Haiti when they have that terrible earthquake and they just mask graves. And people said, I don't even know, you know, where my such-and-such is buried. You know, but that people were picked up and taken to live in these high-tech cities with the hybrids and with the Thetas and with the other aliens if they were highly good-hearted service to other. And that's the criteria, you know, where you care about others as much as you care about yourself, and you're willing to take action to prove that. So there are people, and I know I've been in them, I've been in them. And there they are, the little children that were going to be sold into slavery or whatever, you know, and adults that were going to be killed in the Fukushima tsunami or whatever, and they were snatched, assumed dead in human society, and they're living in these dome cities with the Zetas and the hybrid, if they're the right type. Because if you're not, if you're undecided and you haven't figured out that you really want to be selfless or do you want to be really selfish, you're going to reincarnate as an octopus in your next life. So this is sorting out that goes on. This 90-degree...
Yeah, where are these domed cities located?
They're not in our dimension. They're not in our dimension, but you can believe after the pole shift that they're going to suddenly appear. Mm-hmm. They'll appear in Antarctica. It's going to be free of ice. The Sahara Desert, you know, where what can live there right now, all of a sudden, boom, dome city complexes, you know, and they will just pop up. And then they, if you, those are your neighbors, you're going to be lucky.
Would you had said that that you had a rather plain background, not scientific per se, not at all. And you were saying that this information, this knowledge was imparted to you by the Zetas?
Yeah, I get it telepathically. And this is not hearing a voice in my head, as some people like who are trying to discredit me. It's not schizophrenia at all. You know, I mean, I had a normal, you know, second-level manager. I was in computer systems design, et cetera, consulting, and the like, all the way until I was like 58 years old, and then I retired a little early because I had an opportunity to move to Wisconsin and buy the family homestead. And I, at the time, I was living on the San Andreas, and you know, you can't, you got to walk the talk, or people you don't take you seriously. So, I forgot the question. What was it?
Well, the question is where this knowledge came from.
Yeah, telepathic messages. It's, and then they did something to me in my late 20s. They inserted or infused a small amount of their Zeta DNA into that part of my brain that deals with telepathy, and so that I could pick up their concepts very readily. And I remember at the time, I wasn't even aware I was a contactee, but I all of a sudden I was more telepathic with people. The phone would ring, and I'd say, oh, that's so-and-so, that kind of thing. And I was playing parlor games with it. It's their concept. It gets put into my head, and I wrap English around it, and I know when I'm having this conversation, you know, just the same way I know I'm having a conversation with you, Mike, you know, and it's not the same thing. It's just musing. It's a deliberate conversation, you know, like I'll ask a question or I'll say something, I get something back, then I say something, I get something back. And when we do active Zeta talk or official Zeta talk, I'm open myself, I say, okay, give it to me, you know, and then I type it down, I write down what I'm putting a language around it is the last thing that happens in your brain process. First, you have a concept. And when you want to enunciate it or communicate it, you put your language around it. That's the last step, like wrapping the Christmas present. So if I were a Greek person, I would wrap it in Greece.
Well, Nancy, so do you feel, I mean, the way you're talking, it suggests that are there any other people who are contactees who have same or similar information? I mean, I know some of the contactees here in the New York City area and elsewhere have been shown what amounts to almost like a video or a motion picture showing future devastation of Earth. Do you think that what exactly do you see as your mission, and what role do you expect to play in all of this? And how many people are there that have had, that are embarked on a similar mission?
Yeah. Well, I do know that contactees are regularly talking, you know, to whomever their visitors are about what they're upset about, the weather or, you know, crop shortages or whatever the heck. And they're getting information about what's coming, you know, the pole shift that's coming. So it's broadly known among contactees, of which about 2,000 people on Earth are already contactees. But the Zetas have said no one is doing what I am doing. They haven't had that DNA. They don't do telepathic communication. There are channels. Lisa Royale, for instance, channels the Zetas. There are other works, the Seth material, for instance, Valid, and the like. But this has been a particularly successful Zeta Talk has, for whatever reason. You know, it is clicking, and I'm very prolific. And when they want to give me a complicated scientific concept, you know, they'll have me. Sometimes it takes me 2 days. I have to draw things and do research and get on the same page before I'm ready to understand what they're going to be telling me.
Nancy, why would you say you were chosen for this job?
I wasn't chosen. I asked. If people are not contacted because it's not like abduction. People are only contacted because they asked. They reached out and said, "I'm curious about this," or "I want to know." You know, it's a desire for contact. And in my case, I wanted to be in a communication role during this lifetime. And because they knew me, they said, "We'll back you. You know, we'll stand behind you and work with you on this." So it was my choice. It's always the human's choice. People are not chosen. They choose.
Nancy, why have you had this burning desire, something that would seem to be over and above what, you know, let's say just about everyone else on the planet, their point of view on this? I mean, you said that that you weren't chosen. Why did you ask so strongly?
I'm not sure what my background is, you know, but I know that I'm strongly motivated to help other people that are going to be in a bad situation. I have a situation that stands before me that I repeat, and it's a small child, maybe about 3 years old, broken arm. Mother is dead, standing over his dead mother's body. His arm hurts. You know, nobody's there. Nobody's bothering with him. He's just crying. He's trying to wake his mother up. And there's hungry, wild dogs, you know, circling around. Now, that kind of a situation should not be allowed to happen. We need to tell people what's coming so that that woman and child are not in the city, you know, when all the buildings fall down, etc. That child should have its soul, should remember being rescued, not abandoned, not that feeling of abandonment, not the pain and terror. You know, we don't have to have the pain and terror and abandonment. Even people that are going to be drowning, as long as you hug each other close and say, "It doesn't hurt, and death is not the end, I'll see you on the other side," then there's a different, the soul has a completely different memory. And soul memory, I mean, we don't forget a thing from our past lives. So let's have those memories be good and pass love along, you know, and love each other. And that's what motivates me.
Today's kids wouldn't appear that they have too much of a future. How do parents deal with this who believe this stuff is real, and obviously it's real? I mean, we can argue whether it's Planet X that's causing some of the disruptions on Earth or whether it's some other thing. There's no question that nature is on a tear right now, and we've never experienced anything like this in our lifetime. But how can they deal with this psychologically and also, you know, what can they tell their children? Let's say they have children that are older. They're in their teenage years. They've seen some of this stuff on TV and newspapers. What can they tell them?
It's not a lack of opportunity. It's a huge opportunity. Right now, you're stuck. You know, you have to try to get in the right schools. You're going to a job. You're punching the time clock, and that's you got to look forward to that until you're 65, or you won't get your retirement. I mean, we're all in a rut. You know, we're all like harnessed. You know, pulling the wagon, and we can't get out of the harness. In fact, opportunity will be almost unlimited. You know, you'll be meeting creatures from other worlds, very high tech, you know, and the like, and the opportunity to be a leader and to say to people, okay, here's what we're going to do with the situation. Here's how we're going to rebuild a community, make sure that everybody is fed. You know, that pile of junk over there, let's go through and take it apart and put it together with something that works like a windmill. I mean, this is not theoretical. This is not scratching something on a piece of paper. This is not, you know, video games in front of the TV. It's very real and very rich, and it's exciting because the only thing that's holding you back is desire on your part and what you want to plunge into. Nobody's going to stand around and say, okay, at the start of the school day, sit at your desk. Now be still and be quiet. Nobody's going to say, you're not supposed to be doing that. You're only supposed to turn the wheel and plug and push the red button when the alarm goes off. That, you know, it's you will choose what role you want to play and plunge into it. So it's endless opportunity, not a lack of opportunity.
But what about, you know, again, parents of younger kids, you know, how can they deal with this?
Well, I think just what I've said. I don't consider, you know, you basically plant in the first place. You don't sit where there's going to be nothing to eat. You make a plan, and even if you have to, I've said to people, you're in a city, you've got the job, you can't see how you can leave it, and what are you going to do for a vacation? Oh, you're going to go to Disneyland. What? Don't spend that money. Go and find a family farm inland somewhere where these people need the money because, you know, they're too old to run the farm, but they have all these hand tools, and they have a few pigs and chickens and things like that, and have a garden, and just pay them that money to help them on their small farm and learn, you know, how to garden. And now, here comes the trouble times. It's really getting bad. The last weeks are approaching. You go to that farm, they know you. They're old. They can't, but they have the knowledge. You're young. The kids are just, you know, preteen or whatever, early teen. You know, they have all this energy. And so the oldsters can say, this is how we plant a garden. Here's how the compost pile. Here's what we do. And now you're not only physically safe, but you've got a community. You know, so that's an example of how I would advise people to proceed. We have vast tracts of land, you know, that are you can live on and garden. It's just that what we say is it's got to be a corporate farm, you know, making lots of profits, and everybody has to be crammed into the cities. You know, and we're actually frozen into this way of life and harnessed by our debt so that we can't move. Well, the pole shift is going to free you.
You know, I always got to wonder, Nancy, these super wealthy individuals who head up these corporations, how much money can somebody spend? How much money does somebody really need? I mean, how many homes do they have to own?
Yeah.
It just boggles the mind that they cannot get enough money. They just keep having to. It's like it's total addiction.
Yeah, it is, and there's never enough, as they say. That's the rule they use. There's never enough. I need another billion, or I can't feel secure. Yeah, I'm not in sympathy with that either.
Yeah. So, Nancy, how do people reach you at Zeta Talk?
Well, actually, I have a Contact Nancy email address, and it says, unless you're the media, don't bother. And the reason for this is I'm just overwhelmed. you know, with, I used to answer every email. Boy, that was, and about over a year ago I stopped that. Well, I used to answer personal questions. I stopped that in 1996. And the reason for that is I have a newsletter. You know, I do Q&A once a week and select certain questions to be answered. I like interviews like yours, Mike, but I won't answer your email. Go to the website, type your question into the search engine, which is dedicated, you know, and we have 12 mirror sites around the world, and you'll find your information. And you can go to the Pole Shift Ning and pose your question, but there's a lot of rules. You have to research to see whether the question's already been asked and has it been answered, etc. Right. So the reason for this is I'm in my 70s, you know, and I husband very carefully my energy level so that I can give interviews and I can relay the message.
Okay, and that's www.zetatalk.com, right?
Correct, correct.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank you very much, Nancy, for coming on the Radio Doomsday Live. I must say, I didn't know what to expect when I booked you for the program, except I was very curious because I said to myself, well, if NASA's attacking this woman in Wisconsin, the degree that they are, and she's a UFO contactee, I really got to contact Nancy and find out what she's all about. And what I found out is really very, very encouraging because we may differ on one point or another point. There's always room for people who have different positions on various issues that affect us all. But you certainly appear to me to be very well grounded, not at all the kind of crazy woman that they would try to make you out to be. And I wish you the best of continued luck with success with Zeta Talk. I think it's a really important forum for people to go to, and also I would like to explore with you the possibility of maybe we'll put our heads together and figure out some way of doing a Planet X conference. I think the time would be right for such a conference. I'm thinking of perhaps holding it here in New York City. I've held other major UFO conferences through the years, nothing too recently. And I'd love to do a combined Planet X and UFO conference.
Oh, I would love to attend, but I'd have to attend via Skype.
Okay.
All right. I find, because of my age and health, I don't travel either.
Oh, I see. Well, we can always work out those technical difficulties. I'm sure you know lots of people who are involved with this that might want to be play some kind of a role in it. So stay in touch with you as best I can, and again, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and you've really opened up some very interesting points that we talk about frequently on Radio Doomsday Live, and I wish you continued success.
Yeah, same here, Mike, and I sure appreciate coming on.
Great, thank you, Nancy. Thanks. This is Mike Luckman for Radio Doomsday Live signing off.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes and airplanes.